and I noticed you were folding up the table there. So I called the post office and said, you know, hey, you know, I've had this conversation with several, with the DA over several campaigns, from the Jerry Brown campaign to different campaigns over the years, where we've done petition drives, and the DA has always said that we have a right, you know, to sell our newspapers, to hand out our literature, and to register voters, and to get signatures on petitions. And so I verified that again with the DA. That is their policy. That is the policy of the United States Constitution. I called post office, and they're going to give me a case number this afternoon. I'll have a case number. So anybody that's selling Street Spirit or working on the initiative in any other way, they can just flash this number at them and tell them, call the watch commander if you want. We have an official post office case number on this, making a decision that they are to refrain and stop from harassing these people this way.
So you don't need to go to court to get an injunction here. You don't have to go to our Citizens Police Review Board to complain about an arrest. No, simply call David Silva.
No, just go. You know, there's such a thing now. We have to accept it. Administrative law is governing most operations of life, not civil law, not criminal law, but administrative law really governs a lot, especially when it comes to poor people, and especially when it comes to the attitudes toward people. Poor people. There are things in place still that, you know, administrative law acknowledges, and if you speak to a civil servant and really be very succinct to them, explain to them what the problem is, and that they are interfering with the initiative process and electoral process, they usually respond quite well.
David, you are much. I'm impressed with your effectiveness. I know I take a somewhat more direct, hands-on approach in these circumstances, which isn't always as effective, although sometimes it's more effective, who knows. But certainly both approaches are good, and I'm glad that if anyone in the audience is having problems with harassment in public places when they're either circulating a petitions or trying to sell a Street Spirit, or even trying to hold up a sign and exercise their First Amendment rights to solicit funds for themselves, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we will immediately assign David Silva or one of his many clones to hustle out and deal with the situation. Actually, we'll try to encourage you to deal with the situation, but we'd like to know about it. So do get in touch at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And you can also give a call if you want to join this conversation. If you've been harassed yourself trying to sell the Street Spirit newspaper on the streets, which is the homeless paper, which homeless people sell for a dollar, or just harassed for holding up a panhandling sign, or having difficulties with different police agencies. And a police agency can be a merchant, an individual merchant who is acting as a police officer. Police has to do with the role rather than the official title. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or you can contact SPAN, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. Looks like we got an incoming call. Maybe this is the call we've been waiting for.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Doug. I just wanted to say how nice, you know, Earth Day was yesterday, and there was really a big lack of police presence. It looked like they had a couple of, you know, security persons hired.
That's true. This is Doug McGrath. You're a man who was sufficiently concerned about the Button Street shooting to file a complaint, along with your partner, Marilyn...
Weaver.
Got to get that right one of these days. And I guess the Police Review Board became a big issue as to why Chief Belcher turned back your complaints, and, you know, the Police Review Board was going to go to bat to make sure you had that complaint in the police department. But the ironic thing is, of course, that the Police Review Board hasn't sought any kind of early independent investigation on this at all, and so your complaint is likely to be sitting around in the police department for about 2 or 3 months while the court case goes ahead, and then maybe it'll come creeping out and everybody will have forgotten about this case, and the Police Review Board will meekly give its stamp of approval. I'm sorry I had to throw all that at you for just a brief call that you hauled in, but
let's see if I can get back on my... Yeah, you know, actually there's a few little laws, and it seems like that they've, an ordinance and everything, they keep getting us from behind, that we got to kind of start getting back and figuring out, you know, to get back to the real process of law and public involvement. But I want to get back to how nice it was. There were no police there.
That's true.
And there were no problems. And, you know, there were a couple of people that were drinking illegally, because it is illegal. And they were fine with the public at large. In fact, they got compliments on their dancing, you know, from the band. The band went along, and everyone went along with them, and everything worked out. I just can't help but believe that if there was a policeman there and had seen a few of the inebriated people, it would have made such a bad scene for him to even go speak with them, and would have created something out of whole cloth, just as they did in the Andrew shooting, I believe.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's true. That the you give police officers all these powers, and they have to use them. It's sort of like a self-perpetuating, self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, it's ideally the police force is simply, you know, an arm of the community. And when it becomes an arm against the community, or in this case, armed against the community, then we're in trouble. Anything else you want to share with us?
Well, that's pretty much it. And I actually would like to comment and maybe say that I imagine Celia Scott had probably some direct hand in the lack of police presence there.
Yeah, Celia Scott was kind of wandering around incognito with a hat and sunglasses on, not that incognito, yesterday at the Earth Day San Lorenzo Park festivities.
It was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day. All right, thank you, Doug.
Take it easy.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
He walked all over his own growing land, from the New York Island through the California sand. He saw all the people that needed to be seen, planted all the grass where there needed to be green. And now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. He rode and he sang and he rode upon the rail, and he got on board when the sailors had to sail. He said all the words that needed to be said. He fed all the hungry souls that needed to be fed. And now he's bound for glory all his own. And now he's bound for glory. He sang in our streets and he sang in our halls, and he was always there when the union gave a call. He did all the jobs that needed to be done, and he always stood his ground when the smaller man would run. And now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. Pastures of plenty, wrote the Dust Bowl balladeer. And this land is your land, he wanted us to hear. And the rising of the unions will be sung about again. The deportees live on through the power of his pen. And now he's bound for a glory all his own. And now he's bound for glory. Now they sing out his praises on every distant shore, but so few remember what he was fighting for. Oh, I sing the songs and forget about the aim. He wrote them for a reason, why not sing them for the same? For now he's bound for a glory on his own, and now he's bound for glory.
for Glory on Phil Oakes' mid-70s album, Chords of Fame.
And you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert, how you doing?
Hey, it sounds like Bob LaMonica to me.
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hey, Bob.
I wanted to comment on the Sentinel cartoon. Today's op-ed, Santa Cruz Sentinel, there's a cartoon in there. And in fact, you had commented on this early in your show.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your comments on this cartoon?
Well, why don't we describe that cartoon first? Why don't you
it depicts the complainant process, the police review complainant process, as an absolute mockery. I think that's what it does. It depicts anyone who represents sincere police review as a crackpot.
Mm-hmm.
It shows it says that you are essentially a kooky character if you represent a position that police can be other than perfect, and that to question the authority of the Santa Cruz Police Department is nothing more than degenerate crackpotness. That's what I get out of that cartoon.
Right. I think it has a picture of three kind of counterculture hippie types at the mic. Complaining about, what are they complaining about?
A dead deer or something? It's so insincere. They're complaining about a dead deer, right? That was shot by the police officer apparently on a hunting party,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's the essential of the cartoon is that it's a mockery of the idea, as far as I'm concerned, that there is a legitimate concern for police review.
Mm-hmm.
And what this cartoon attempts to do is it associates discredibility with the issue of police review. And this is very, I think the wrongful approach for the newspaper Record to take in its position on this issue, because this cartoonist is straight from the Sentinel.
Well, it's kind of ironic because it was the Sentinel which called for an independent investigation in the Happy John Dine case, and the police review board, which decided it didn't want to bother. So the very board that they call a bunch of crackpots, or I should say the people who bring complaints to the board, it's not quite clear exactly who they're criticizing in this cartoon, is actually more pro-police and more willing to give a rubber stamp to the police department than the Sentinel itself, at least in the Happy John Dine case.
And you wonder how many lawyers had a hand in the caption below. When police review boards can investigate, quote, all shootings,
mm-hmm.
because some of the dialogue has been coming out is, what is her name, Lisa Rose,
mm-hmm.
Who has requested that all police shootings should be reviewed by the police review board?
Well, actually, that was Bill Christie, but the board generally went along with it. But again, as I said earlier in the show, there's misunderstanding about that. It's not that the board has asked for the power to investigate. They have the power to investigate right now. They could have actually, on Monday, tried to investigate this. And when they hear of a police shooting, they can investigate it. But what they are saying is they don't want to investigate it. They just want to be able to look at the police complaint process afterward, which could happen months afterward. And so it really, to me, is it's a phony issue to begin with. But apparently the Sentinel is so shallow and so out of touch with the issue, even as it was posed by the police review board, it doesn't see that this is essentially almost an administrative afterthought that the police review board is seeking. It isn't like it's seeking a real investigation of shooting. That would be something significant. Or let's say an independent Celia Scott, after the Happy John Dine shooting, briefly suggested a public hearing officer be empowered after a shooting incident. And then she never took it anywhere. Well, this is not what the board is proposing. The board isn't proposing anything public, anything independent, or even anything investigative. All it's saying is that it wants to make sure that Chief Belcher doesn't just dispose of complaints without telling the board, because that's what it did in the case of the Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver complaints. Chief Belcher took these complaints, said they weren't good enough, and then disposed of them without even telling the board that he wasn't accepting them. So the board is a little bit miffed. It's almost like a territorial turf war.
Well,
that's the substance of it.
Yeah, that's great, too. And the whole disposing of complaints, I think, needs to be called into question on this recent shooting. There could have been a different approach. The issue being that is there not a sincere way to challenge police conduct without being labeled a crackpot.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Now, abuse of power is difficult for that very reason, because what it means is naming names. Okay? Mm-hmm. It gets down right to the specific names of specific individuals for whom the allegation is raised that this individual has abused their authority. And there could have been a different approach. And should not we raise the issue, particularly when we're talking about lethal force? If we cannot raise the issue that a different approach can be taken when lethal force was used, we're being asked to look the other way at life and death. And this is very sincere and can't be sloughed off with vicious cartoons by the newspaper record, the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Well, we should also mention that the newspaper, the Sentinel Junior or Sentinel Light, the Metro Santa Cruz, which had a similar cartoon at midweek. I don't know if you saw that, Bob.
Yes, I did. And Mr. DeCinzo should at least attempt to represent the opposing point of view with similar wit and candor. Mm-hmm. And then I think he can call himself a political cartoonist of some merit. But thus far, he has represented the issue of police review in incredibly demeaning terms for the following that he has. He has at least enough creativity, I would think, to find a way to represent the other side of the issue in all sincerity, which I think can be stated as, do we not have the responsibility to challenge authority when it gets down to death and the lethal use of force, when we know, if we go one step above the surface, that there are alternatives?
Well, I think that's very well put, and I think that, I mean, I think DeCinzo has the right to do whatever he wants. He's a journalist. He's a satirist. I mean, his point of view is woefully ignorant, and I think somewhat bigoted on that issue and various other issues. Though on some issues, I agree with him, but I do think that, you know, your point, Celia Scott's point, even Bill Christie's point about not having shooting complaints disappear into the bowels of Belcher's police department is really important. I mean, it's important for a number of reasons. I mean, for Bill Christie's police review board, now Lisa Rose's police review board, they're both still on the board, but it's important because it makes it obvious the board is nothing but a joke if they don't even get to see complaints on the most important issues. So,
obvious. See, the Citizens Police Review Board in Santa Cruz, I think, can be stated in the obvious historical context that it was co-opted from the very start. Because I'll parentheticize this with, apparently anyone who has dared to challenge the absolute dictates of the hierarchy has been forced out of office and or resigned. Am I correct on that?
Well, certainly the most forthright members of the board, Gia Grant and John Malkin, have complained of police misconduct and toward them personally, harassment toward them, and in John Malkin's case, complete lack of support by the board, and consequently resigned. Others have resigned because they haven't gotten, they feel the board is ineffectual. Alan Lang is really the only original member of the board still there, and as I mentioned before, Alan, you know, I think has health problems that make him really ineffectual itself on the board, although he does try. As I said, at the last board meeting, he moved to have an investigation. It wasn't clear whether he wanted an early investigation or an independent investigation, but at least he wanted to do something around the Button Street shooting, the McGrath complaints about the Andrus shooting, the shooting of Brian Andrus, and he was ignored by the rest of the board. And that, I think, is what they do. The Sentinel and powers and authority, their first response is to ignore you. Their second response is to deride and discredit you, and then the third response is to deny it.
I got a couple of things here. There are sincere witnesses in the Button Street shooting. In fact, you've had some of them on your show,
mm-hmm.
Who are far from being crackpots. They're
just ordinary people,
right? Yes, exactly. Very mainstream people. I think one of the gentlemen, his sister is a police officer in some community back east.
Right. Well, actually, there are a number of them who have relatives on the police force.
Right.
You know.
So these are far from cop haters.
No.
Right. These are honest Americans with honest complaints about their law enforcement authority in their community, and they cannot be sloughed off with what are really crackpot one-liner vicious attempts to discredit.
Mm-hmm.
Citizens doing what is their responsibility, which is to question authority when it is out of line. I wanted to comment on the Police Review Board, and that is that what it appears to have become is a spineless rubber stamp parading as an independent citizens review.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true. You know,
is this all about? If we're going to have this institution and call it a Citizens Police Review Board, and if two instances of this merit appear on the calendar, and what was done with the Dine matter, Robert, by the Citizens Police Review Board can best be qualified as shameful. I mean, how long did they wait before they had even one closed hearing?
Yeah, they waited a month and a half.
I mean, this is spineless rubber stamping parading as an independent review board.
Yeah, it's... And the reality
and
is...
Why have it, then? Do we just want to hoodwink ourselves? Is it part of our layer of denial and spin doctoring that we set up these institutions and we call them certain things and we allow them to rubber stamp for us so we can look the other way and not really acknowledge what's in front of us?
Well, I think that
smoke and mirrors? I'm sorry.
No. I mean, the answer is, I mean, it sprang from originally concerns about abusive homeless people in the early 90s when the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board got out there on the streets and petitioned and tried to get everything rolling. And
By the way, I thought that Nicholas Whitehead's comments, I happened to catch your show last Thursday, his comments to the Police Review Board that you played.
Are you concerned about firearms policy?
I thought they were very eloquent. He pointed out examples of other communities.
They never go anywhere. You know, he's talked to the Police Review Board about that issue, about pepper spray. He's always
The approach is correct.
Oh, sure.
What he indicates is that, look, there are other alternatives in practice besides whipping out the old six-shooter and blasting away.
Right. I mean, and
anybody with any sincerity that looks at the John Dine matter, and once again, I'll say the dead guy can't testify. And to say that there could not have been another approach in that is to play the ultimate citizen coward.
I'm afraid that's true, and I would extend that to our highest politicians like Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, who went along with that 7-0 council approval of the CPRB whitewash. And much as I agree with Celia and Catherine on other matters, I cannot agree with them at all on what they did in this case.
Robert, thanks for letting me call in.
Sure.
You bet.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We have open phone lines at 423-5361. We're talking about police misconduct, civil rights for poor people, and other subjects. We often have updates from other communities. Now we're going to play you a brief conversation with San Diego, where as of 3 or 4 days ago, there was 150 people in front of City Hall. You're going to hear about it now. On the line with Richard Mead at Streetlight in San Diego. How you doing, Richard?
All right.
And you've had some kind of a protest going on down there for about a month now.
Yes.
What's that all about?
We're trying to get a protest going on around shelter.
Uh-huh.
For the homeless people here.
And are you homeless yourself?
Yes, I am.
And have you been involved with this protest?
Yes.
And how many folks are doing this protest, and where is it happening?
We've done it 202. D Street, San Diego, California.
In front of City Hall, or?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. And what, are you staying there 24 hours a day?
Yes, it's going on 5 weeks already.
And what are your concerns? Do you have any specific demands?
We're hoping for the mayor to try to get a year-round shelter for the homeless.
Uh-huh. Are there any shelters already in San Diego?
Right now, they're all closing up.
I see. You yourself, where do you sleep at night?
Wherever I can, we talk to cops harassing.
Yeah, when's the last time you got a ticket from the police?
Last time I got one is about 2 weeks ago.
And what was the charge?
For ordering.
Loitering?
Yes.
Were you sleeping or were you walking or what was happening?
Sleeping.
And was this at the protest or somewhere else?
It was done at the Balboa Park.
And what, so were you alone or were other people there?
It was me and my wife and another person.
And how many people got tickets?
Just the three of us.
And how much does a ticket cost you?
It cost us $80 a piece.
And what did you do the next night?
The next night we just kept on walking, try to sleep in the daytime and stay awake at night.
So they don't give you tickets in the daytime?
Correct.
Now, have people gotten tickets down at the protest at City Hall?
No.
And how many people a night would you say are there?
That's it. There's about 150 right now.
I mean, 150 people are down there?
Yes.
So people are kind of using the area as a campground?
Yes.
And how's the media been treating you? Much been written in the papers?
Yeah.
What are they saying about you?
Just if people are concerned, just call the mayor, Susan Golding.
And say it again?
If people are, we've been getting a lot of people's support.
Uh-huh.
We've been having them call the mayor up.
Has the mayor come down and talk to you guys yet?
No.
And what percentage of the people down there would you estimate are women?
There's about 6 women.
How about children?
On children there's 4, then there's 2 babies.
Okay, you guys have tents? I mean, the weather hasn't been very nice, right?
No, we don't got no tents. They're all just like, lay on the cement.
What do you do when it rains?
I get underneath the cover of the mayor's doorstep.
Uh-huh. So, have there been 150 every night, or did it start small?
At first it started out small, and it all of a sudden it just built up.
Now, when do you think this happened? Was it a week or two, or was it just in the last week?
About last week.
Wow, is there anything up here in Santa Cruz we can do to help you folks?
All we can ask is people in Santa Cruz just call Susan Golding and tell them, hey, we need shelters.
Do you have a phone number and a name that we should call?
Yeah, just a minute.
Okay. We're on the line talking to Rick in San Diego, California, where a protest is in progress. Apparently for the last 5 weeks, to press the city to open up adequate shelter rather than give these $80 tickets that are apparently given out at night for sleeping families on the streets of San Diego. You back yet, Rick?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Rick, what's the number that people should call if they want to express their concern?
Mayor Susan Golding.
Mayor Susan Golding.
San Diego, California.
San Diego.
Area code 619.
619.
236.
236.
6300.
6300. One more time.
Yes.
619.
Area code 619.
Uh-huh.
236. 6330.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, and give my regards to the editors of your paper. I guess you work at putting out a homeless paper called Streetlight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hope to hear from you all, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you.
And that's Rick at San Diego Streetlights, which is a homeless paper in San Diego, really a good one. Don't get it up here, but if you ever want to see it, give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833, 423-HUF. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And if you happen to be out at the flea market today, check out the Free Radio Santa Cruz table, where we're going to be tabling, and grab some programs, t-shirts, patches, and other paraphernalia, and help support this station. Falling behind a bit in our rent, and we need your help. If you want these programs to continue, you have to help support us. If you want to contact this show, you can give a call to on air now to 423-5361. And off air, you can catch me, I'm Robert Norse, at 423-4833. For the last caller talked about police review, and indeed we had the once a month meeting that the Police Review Board deigns to hold. I guess it's the second Monday of every month they have their public hearing. And I kind of went into it in some detail on Thursday. I tend to go into detail on this stuff. It interests me. And I guess it's important when we have a serious, if not possibly fatal, shooting happening by the police department and no apparent action by the Police Review Board other than to say, oh, please, please send us these complaints. And when in fact they have the power to actually start investigating right now if they want. They've chosen not to do that. There actually was an interesting speaker at the Police Review Board on Monday, a woman named Kay Bowden. Kay was once chair of the Citizens Police Review Board. She's an attorney. She wasn't a very good chair, in my opinion. She was wrapped up in legalisms and didn't get very far. But even she was outraged at what was going on. the fact that the complaints by Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver were essentially not, turned back by Police Chief Belcher without with an explanation that was completely insufficient. He claimed it wasn't specific enough, and she points out that it was completely specific and it was fine, and that wasn't the practice the police department used anyway in such past cases. Normally, if the police department found it too vague, they would call you up and they would say, look, what's the problem? You know, it seems a little vague, and they would correct it that way. For some reason, they didn't do that in this case. Now, I suggested at the mic, and I suggested on the last show, that the reason Police Chief Belcher didn't want these complaints sent into the internal affairs process was, for some reason, he didn't want the police reports released, because the police reports were also being denied to the defense counsel for Brian Andrus, the man who was shot by the police, at the same time. Again, speculation on my part, but I would like to hear some response on that from the police chief from the city, because I think it's an interesting coincidence. Let's hear a little bit of Kay Bowden talking to the Police Review Board. She's a very articulate attorney, and she makes the case around this rather narrow issue more specifically and more clearly than I could.
I don't usually come back. Well, this got me upset enough that I didn't come back.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Kay Archibald, and I served on the Police Review Board, on the initial board. And I'm here to talk on the two items tonight, both this one and the next one. On this one, it seems to me the issue is what is a complaint and who gets to decide that. That's really important. The chief's memo, and I have some problems with the material that was attached to it, and I disagree with the legal opinion you got. I haven't read it, but I disagree with the conclusion. The chief's memo refers to guidelines, but does not, in his memo to Gary, but does not identify what he's referring to. So you have to look at his memo to see what his criteria were. And his criteria were, they have to name or identify the officer, and they have to identify the law or policy violations in the narrative. My response to number one is, the incident was clearly identified. The chief knew who the officers were. I knew who the officers were. His letter to the complainant implies that he knows exactly what the complaint was talking about. So it seems to me to be an elevation of, an unreasonable elevation of requirements on the complainant to name the police officer if you can tell from the context exactly who's being talked about. And that was clear from this complaint. My response to the second one about identifying law or policy violations in the narrative, the complaint form is designed by the police department. We went through hours on this. We wanted to design it, but they designed it. It has a multiple choice section at the bottom of the first page of the complaint. Those little bullets, common sense, and any experience filling out forms would lead one to believe that circling one of these, or all of them, would meet that criterion. That's certainly the way we interpreted it before this and the complaints that we looked at. The other question is, does the chief have the authority to reject? On page 3 of the complaint form, there's a citation of state law. And I know it's been used for a different purpose, but when I read it, I thought, gee, this is odd. The sentence reads, this agency, I guess that means the police department, may find, after investigation, that there is not enough evidence to warrant action on your complaint. Even if that is the case, you have the right to make the complaint and have it investigated if you believe an officer behaved improperly. Now, if I were to read that, I would assume that my complaint could not be rejected until after an investigation was done. And this is the complaint that is given out to people on the outside. You can't assume that someone is going to have special knowledge other than what's here. I don't understand what that sentence means if the chief is able to label the complaint invalid and not do an investigation. The chief's memo says he has not received a response to his letter to the complainants. Well, I can tell you, if I had gotten that letter, I probably wouldn't have responded either. I'm surprised that they actually amended their complaint. Because I found that letter, his letters very confusing. His letters to the complainants do not clearly say that the complaint is insufficient and that it will not be investigated. In paragraph 3, he says there will be a full and complete, quote, internal investigation. Now, I know that specific technical language, perhaps that's different from an internal affairs investigation. But unless you had special knowledge, I don't think that you would interpret it as different. Paragraph 3 goes on to say that the complaint will be forwarded to the CPRB for their review. That doesn't sound like a rejection to me. It sounds like it's coming to you, and it sounds like there's nothing wrong so far. In paragraph 4, which is based on the penal code, he says, I will not be acting on your complaint as the sole basis for an investigation of this matter. Again, that doesn't tell me that my complaint has been rejected, or why. That's possible that, I mean, if that was his decision, and apparently it was, it's certainly possible to write a letter that says, I'm not going to process your complaint because you failed to name the officers and you did not identify the basis for your complaint.
We're listening to Kay Bowden at Monday's Citizens Police Review Board public meeting last Monday. So as we can hear from Attorney Kay Bowden, who was also at one time head of the Citizens Police Review Board, the letter from Chief Belcher rejecting the complaints on the Andrus shootings was not only, it didn't make clear that it was rejecting the complaints. So the complainants receiving these letters might have assumed that their complaints were going through anyway, and then learned too late that they weren't. It also gave reasons for rejecting the complaints, according to Kay Bowden, that were completely wrong. That is to say, claiming that the specific officers and policies followed were not named, which in fact they were. So, again, the whole issue of Chief Belcher's making this determination and sending out these letters when he did seems to me very strange. He's done that once or twice before, but in this circumstance, when the police reports have not been available, I continue to wonder. A little musical interlude, and then we're going to move to the hot area in the Citizens Police Review Board, where your host was threatened with arrest and removal.
Show me a jail. Show me a prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley, show me a train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain, and I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the whiskey stains on the floor. Show me a drunken man as he stumbles out the door. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the country.
I'm shocked and pleased. Kate and I really have good things to say about each other, but I'm glad on this occasion we agree. We're talking about a police chief that drove Gia Brand and John Malkin off this board. These are the most outspoken members on behalf of citizen rights. This is a police chief who single-handedly violated his own directive C7, which requires all complaints to be forwarded, and he buried and discouraged all these, and many of these, under the rubric of inquiries, called inquiries, violating city law, violating, in my mind, state law as well. This is the chief whose contradictory findings in the Dine case have been commented on or criticized by this board, and him not doing so, he feels, I'm beginning to think he feels he can do just whatever the hell he wants. Now, I think it's very important what Kay said here, which is that, and what Gary pointed out to me this morning, that these complaints, even if they're rectified and brought forward, if they're followed through the normal internal affairs process, will the police department can hold them up until the proceedings are over in court, which could take months. And this board, unless it acts on an early investigation, will have to wait until those come out, months and months and months. That's why I'm going to urge you now, and I will again urge you when we talk on the next agenda item, to consider an early investigation around this issue. So that the police chief cannot thwart this situation by this kind of action. I also want to point out an interesting fact. I've been following this case in court. It's gone through four hearings so far. Courts on two occasions have ordered the district attorney to produce police reports and the district attorney's interviews of these affected officers, Gerasio, Hennig, and the other two. The DA's office has declined to do so time after time. Defense Attorney John Thornton has requested repeatedly these police reports be given. They were not given. Finally, last week, after a month's delay, they were released. Now, I don't wish to accuse the police chief of something like a conspiracy, heavens, certainly not. But my question to you is, isn't it kind of strange that the police chief is not releasing the reports? Either the district attorney's office simultaneously is not releasing the reports to the defense counsel. I think that as a board that's trying to look at the bigger picture, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to wonder, is there a connection? I don't know if there is. I simply raise the question. But I suggest to you that if Police Chief Belcher doesn't have his officer's story straight and down clearly, then he certainly doesn't want to have to release those complaints into the Internal Affairs Department. And one way to avoid this is to claim that these two complaints by Marilyn and Douglas are somehow invalid when it's quite obvious, as Kay has told you, that they're not.
Show me the ruins of the buildings once so tall, and I'll show you a young land with so many reasons why. And there but for a fortune may go you or I, or I. Just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Well, you've given me a number, and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, you almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I wish that you'd make up your mind, I wish that you'd decide, that I should live as freely as those who live outside. Cause we also are entitled to the rights to be endowed. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you'd like to be my father, you'd like to be my dad, and give me kisses when I'm good and spank me when I'm bad. But since I left my parents, I've forgotten how to bow. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. And things, they might be different if I was here alone, but I've got a friend or two who no longer live at home, and we'll respect our elders just as long as they allow. That when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I've read of other countries where the students take a stand. They've even helped to overthrow the leaders of the land. Now I wouldn't go so far to say we're also learning how, but when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. So keep right on a-talking and tell us what to do. But if nobody listens, my apologies to you. And I know that you were younger once, 'cause you sure are older now. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. So I'm just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.
Phil Oakes, I'm gonna say it now. Well, the tape I promised you of yours truly getting threatened with arrest at the Citizens Police Review Board. Actually, it was worse than that. They cut me off. They violated the...